Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and good morning. Glad you're here with us. We are live in the studio on this Saturday morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umeth, also in the studio, and taking your calls today at 800-465-8770. We're going to go a little south now to Tukwila. We have BJ on the line. Good morning, BJ.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions about after stroke treatment. I've had the misfortune of having a little mild stroke on my right side 10 days ago, and it's going to be treated with Eliquis and Lipitor. Well, I tried Lipitor, one tablet, and it gave me so much pain in the abdomen, I decided, well, that's a no-no drug for me. But I have questions about the use of Eliquis, because they say once you start on it, you're on it for their life, and that's a pretty strong blood thinner. They want me to have 5 milligrams twice a day. So I'm all ears to see if I've got a history of kidney and intestinal problems that goes through 20 years or so, kidney stones as well as pancolitis and treatment. Then I finally got off of mercaptopurin, but C. diff and a few other things. My GI tract never was really chipper, but it's been good until I had this mini stroke. I call it a mini stroke. I had a little paralysis on the right side and tingling to the point where my wife had to take over the car driving. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, we better get an extra opinion. I've had good help from the Valley Medical Clinic, but I also got some contradictions on type of medications I take. So I thought, well, I'll talk to a doctor that seems to have all of it under his belt.
There you go. Okay, well, BJ, you got Dr. Mixon here with you.
How old are you, BJ?
83.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, Eliquis is not an addictive drug. It's the reason people usually stay on it is simply that whatever caused you to have that stroke, that blood clot that shut off a blood vessel in your brain, is still there. And so using the Eliquis will lower the chances of you having a subsequent stroke. And you're not going to get any younger, and those blood vessels in your head are not going to get any better. And so, you know, as a practical matter, yeah, you probably need to be on the anticoagulant for the next 70 years. You'll only be 160 by then. So,
yeah.
about where my goal was, about 120
right, exactly,
or so.
Right.
And good.
Yeah. And the risk for side effects is much lower with Eliquis than with the older drugs like warfarin.
That's right.
And you don't have to go in and get yourself checked frequently either. There is a cost involved.
Yeah, well, they were concerned that I had healthy kidneys before they started, and I thought, well, I've had some pretty dark urine in the last year or so. It doesn't last, but it pops up, and then I take pictures of it, and I just thought, well, I'd find out if I don't even know if I have a kidney disease, but I do know that I've had occasions where dark urine concerns me, and I haven't really got to the bottom of that question yet either. But does Eliquis have a deleterious effect of the kidneys or the liver?
No, you know, it really should not. In fact, it should help kidney function in that you're less likely to clot off any of the blood flow within those kidneys, which are just big bundles of blood vessels. So, I think the Eliquist is a very reasonable thing for you to be taking long term.
Excellent.
The statin, maybe, maybe not. That one doesn't concern me so much either way. I'll tell you the one that I had such
a strong reaction to Lipitor. I got one pill and my abdomen was like I had kidney stones all over the front of it.
Oh my goodness.
This is not good. So no. I figured, well, Lipitor is not going to be on my list anymore, but I worried about whether the reaction was typical or out of the, they told me you got that from one pill. And I had it filled, but I never opened the bottle. I just took it back to the hospital and says, no, I just want you to mark my charts that I'm not a happy camper with that stuff in me.
Okay. I'll tell you what, actually, though, I would seriously consider, and that would be a 5 milligrams of tadalafil a day. And that's because the tadalafil dilates blood vessels and improves blood flow in the brain. It's designed to be an erectile disorder drug.
Or for a prostate.
Or for a prostate, for urination. But it...
I have that problem, too. Urine not calling it anymore.
Yeah. Well, it improves urination, but it works in your whole body. And so every blood vessel in your body tends to open up and improve blood flow, including the brain. And since you've stroked, by definition, you shut off one of those blood vessels, I like to see those vessels stay as big and robust as possible. So, you know, more likely your family doc would be the one to write that. Mm-hmm. But you might talk to them about using tadalafil 5 milligrams a day.
Oh, great. That's exactly the thing I was hoping to hear.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate
You're welcome,
your time.
Sir.
Thank you for the call, BJ. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and you can call as well. The phone lines are open at 800-465-8770. We have Judy calling in now from Spanaway. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
How can we help, ma'am?
I have terrible pain in my foot. I had to have all of my toes amputated after I had TPP 13 years ago.
Oh, dear.
And my right leg was amputated below the knee, and I lost the fingers. And anyway, my doctor up here is suggesting maybe a spinal cord stimulator, and I'm just not convinced. What's your thoughts on those?
They seem to work for some folks. They are not as good as we hoped they would be 40 years ago when they first started getting used. Back in the 1970s, those were being touted as the answer. But over the decades, we found that while some people get good results, most it's kind of so-so.
Okay. Is there any other option that you can maybe think of that I might look into for the pain?
Depends on how widespread it is.
They're talking about spinal cord stimulators. I'm pretty sure they've tried a lot. And that she's in a lot of pain.
But she's still in pain. So what I'm wondering is, have they thought about using such a local gel or cream like our neurogels?
Well, why don't we ask her?
Yeah.
Have you?
Have they done a compounded neurogel with an analeptic agent and some narcotics that you can apply right where the pain is occurring?
Or is she getting phantom pain? Are you getting phantom pain?
No, it's not phantom pain. I know what phantom pain is, and this isn't. It's my whole foot. Sometimes it feels like it's all swollen. It doesn't really, although I can't really tell because I don't have another foot to look at. But it kind of feels like it's just swollen and just a deep pain all throughout my foot, what's left of it.
Okay. Boy.
That's a tough one.
It is. Well, I'm just wondering, I suspect they've done compression dressings on it already?
No.
Okay.
I just moved up here from California, and my pain doctor down there just had me on morphine, which I'm almost out of it. And it helps, but it doesn't help totally.
Yeah. Well, see, one of the things we can do, and it's not a standard prescription. It's one that the compounding pharmacist can put together. But
right.
Paramount Pharmacy, if your doctor writes it, can actually put a cream that has both the narcotics and a neuroleptic agent, an anesthetic agent, in the cream that you can apply right to the area where the pain is at. And so the nerves in that area get a high dose of narcotic and anesthesia, but your rest of your body doesn't. So we don't have the problems we get from raising doses of narcotics because we're only putting it there, not in your system as a whole.
I've thought. I've also, my primary just had me do a vascular ultrasound to make sure that I was getting proper blood flow down to my foot. And I don't have the results from that because I just had that done on Thursday. So I'm just not positive that the spinal stimulant. I'm afraid of somebody messing with my back.
Hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
I understand.
Understandable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it works or not, it's just scary that, somebody's putting stuff up your spine, right next to your spinal cord.
But people that do this routinely, they're very, very good at it. The injury incidence is extremely low. My only question is whether or not it's going to work.
It will help or not.
Yeah, and some people, it works gangbusters, but they seem to be the minority.
Mm.
It seems to help some in a lot of people.
The trial is that 5-day trial. Is that going to be enough time to see if it's going to really work?
Yes.
It should be.
Okay. Yeah. If it's going to work, it should start working right away.
Yeah. What about a consult with Dr. Dan Nelson?
Dan is always a good option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is a physician we know, a Dr. Daniel Nelson.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about him on the radio. I listen quite often since I've been here.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a pain specialist. That's all he does is pain of a variety of sorts. You might take your records and get another opinion too. Second, third, fourth opinions are never bad. Fresh set of eyes will sometimes get a solution that the other guys didn't.
Right. Okay. Okay. That pretty much answers my questions.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate the call.
Thank you
so much, Judy. Ooh.
Good luck to you, Judy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We got some toughies today.
Oh, boy.
I know, right?
And another one on the way here next break.
What happened to the
quick ones?
The fungus and the toenails or something?
Or should I get a COVID vaccine?
Fungus and the toenails, Jerry.
No. All right. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon is here. Dr. Samiri Umat. And ready to answer your questions and talk with you about your recent diagnosis or maybe some symptoms you don't quite understand. Here is that number to get through. Phone lines are wide open right now at 1-800-465-8770. You stay right there. Anthony, we'll talk with you next right here on Leading Edge Medicine.
As we stroll along together,
we're back. Leading Edge Medicine, this is hour number two and featuring your calls at 800-465-8770 and talking with Dr. Jerry Mixon live in the studio, along with Dr. Samira Umet as well. We are going to stay right here in beautiful Seattle. We have Anthony on the line. Hi there, Anthony.
Hello, Anthony.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Love your show.
Well, thank you, sir.
My situation is I've been diagnosed with CMML leukemia. It's been about a year. Uh-huh. And I've been on testosterone. The first oncologist said, go very easy on it. And I've had problems with that first oncologist. I'm at CCA right now, and that place is great. And they're saying it's okay. I just wonder if you have a perspective.
Well, chronic myeloid leukemia is, you know, the good news is it's chronic. It's not one of those that's going to run you downhill and, you know, bury you in the next 6 months. That's the good news. You know, most people can watch it for some time before they really need aggressive therapy. But sooner or later, you're probably going to need some aggressive therapy. Your voice, however, sounds like a somewhat older man. Can you give us your age?
79.
Okay, well, you're not that old. I'm turning 76, so you're my contemporary. All right, you're not allowed to be old because, you know, how old is always defined as 15 years older than me.
So you know why it's fun to work with him.
You get about 1 in 500 or 600 people catch this disease. So it's not that fast. And the good news, it's a slowly progressive disease for most people.
Yeah, so far so good. It's stable.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I am a little curious about why he was hesitant about the testosterone, however. I'm not aware of any papers showing that testosterone aggravates CML.
Well, this is CMML, so it's a little variant to CML. I didn't really probe him. When I heard the diagnosis, I said, I'll see you later. I'm going to CCA. And I was somewhat abrupt with the guy because I went through two oncologists at this health maintenance organization, and I was less than really satisfied, and I couldn't be more happier with CCCA.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. They have a very good reputation even outside of the Washington area. When I've gone to conferences and spoken to people, you know, their reputation is actually national. So, very good place.
Yeah, just a little more background. I do take testosterone cream, but I take it every other day since I heard that mentioned by my initial oncologist. I'm also taking DHEA, and I measure these every 3 or 4 months. My DHEA last time was in the 80th percentile, so I've cut that back, and I'm going to have it measured in another next couple of weeks. The testosterone runs 240, 250, and it seems to really work for me. In fact, the first oncologist, when he tried to do a biopsy, got a pain in his elbow and wrist because he couldn't penetrate the bone while I was doing the bone biopsy. And I told him I was on testosterone, and my bones tend to be very strong. So that was the second time I had a bone biopsy. I told the radiologist, you better use a mallet. And he did, and it took about 3 or 4 whacks to get in there. So I got a definitive diagnosis, at least from the second biopsy.
Got it. Okay.
All right.
So have you been to Seattle Cancer Care yet or not?
I've been there for a year.
Oh, you have. So do they know that you're using testosterone?
Yes, they check me on my meds every week.
Good. And so they don't have an objection to your using it?
No. In fact, I also brought up the senescent cell therapy that I've been listening to you from your show. And the oncologist says she uses the, is it the dasatinib?
Yes.
Yes.
In her
practice.
Bag of tricks. And I have a very standard protocol right now with just acetamine, and that seems to be working well. Right. And okay. She said, well, it's going well right now. Let's maybe not change it. But I'm concerned, as you are, with all the senescent cells, with right. The cytamine killing off good cells as well as bad cells, and whether I need to get rid of those dead cells quicker.
Okay, can I ask one question about testosterone? You mentioned that you're using it every other day, and you also said it's working okay for you. Are you okay using it every other day? I mean, it helps with so many other things. If they're allowing you to use it, why not use it daily to help endurance, stamina, blood cells, anemia risk reduction is decreased, you build more muscle mass, and you decrease inflammation?
Well, that's why I'm somewhat... I'm ambivalent about it. I really like what it does to me, but on the other hand, the initial oncologist says go a little easier with it.
Yeah.
So, but I still seem to be at a decent level applying it, every other day, as well as taking my DHEA every other day.
Okay. Well, she's been chatting, I've been running through National Institute of Health database looking for studies on CMML and testosterone. And I don't see anything here that makes it bad. A lot of the older papers from 10, 15 years ago were saying testosterone should be used judiciously and people need to be monitored and watched. But
right.
as the papers are published and the years go by, I'm not seeing any pattern that would indicate that there's a high risk of problems with it. Hmm. And we know that it's got benefits.
Right.
And, life, especially medicine, is always a matter of how many benefits can I get balanced against as few risks as possible, you know. Deficiency diseases like you've got, generally the problem is not making enough red blood cells.
That's correct.
And testosterone typically stimulates the growth of red blood cells. The biggest problem we get with testosterone is that men sometimes have to donate blood more often because they're making so many red cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
I understand.
Yeah, so that's just the opposite of the problem you got. So, I don't know. If it were me, I would talk to my doctors about going to everyday therapy. Put it on in the morning, wash it off at night so you're without it during the night. But I discuss that with whoever is prescribing your testosterone and say, what specifically are the downsides you're worried about?
Right.
And, what is the peer-reviewed literature that says that this is a downside? Because, frankly, I'm not seeing a whole lot in a kind of a cursory review here.
Right. And, I understand you have CMML, but literature has suggested that replacement of DHEA and testosterone improves lifespan.
Yes, it does.
I couldn't agree more. I really approve of that therapy. It's really helped me over the years.
I don't know who's writing your prescriptions, but go chat with them about it and ask them, can you pull some papers? If there are real risks, we don't want to do it. But, the folks I've chatted with have said, hey, so far the literature they've seen is kind of encouraging.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I think you're correct that they need to pull papers. The first time I asked to be put on testosterone, the doctor was oblivious. So,
yeah,
But I hear what you're saying. Do you have time for one more quick question?
A quick one, yes.
I've been receiving red blood cell infusions, transfusions. Mm-hmm. Is there any danger in terms of getting, several, if not many, of those transfusions? I do get platelet transfusions, and they don't seem to be as problematic, but the oncologist was a bit wary about receiving too many, red blood cell, I guess that's whole blood transfusions.
Yeah. Well, it's just that the blood is always tested. You know, they're screened for viruses, they're screened for all sorts of pathogens and so on. But no screening process is 100% accurate. Okay, nothing done to or by human beings is perfect. That's just the real world.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you do anything often enough, the risks of adverse effects start to rise. That's just all there is to it. And so while our testing of that blood you're going to receive is good, it's not perfect.
But they only give it to him when he needs it, right,
Jerry? Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But once more, here's your problem. The testosterone tends to stimulate the growth of red blood cells. Yeah. You're having to get transfusions because you're not making enough red blood cells.
Right.
Personally, I don't see the issue.
And if they're allowing you to use it every other day.
Why not every day? Yeah.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. Well, thank you so much, doctors. I appreciate
you're
the
welcome,
show, and
sir.
I appreciate your service.
And good luck to you, okay?
Take care,
yeah,
sir.
All
Bye-bye.
The best.
Thank you for the call, Anthony.
Thank you. So
thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Are we going to have any simple problems today?
I'm looking here. You know what?
Wow.
We're going to talk about
it's
hernias.
Been a tough day. A tough
in just
morning.
A moment.
And you know, yeah. I mean, we don't know the people that are calling, mm-hmm. obviously, but it's. We sympathize. You
yes.
know?
We do. I feel for these.
We feel for them.
We got people with some real problems.
I know.
Yeah. Hoping for some good answers and some good discussion, too. We welcome your call this morning at 800-465-8770. We're going to talk with Ben, and we have Rose on the line as well. We'll take those calls right after this break. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. Dr. Mixon, Dr. UMass in the studio live this morning talking behind the scenes. I'm Lynette. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, and we have room for your calls as well. 800-465-8770 is the number to call and get through today. All right, we have Ben calling in from Lake Taps. Good morning, Ben. Welcome
Hello,
to the
Ben.
Show.
How can we help you, sir?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have had a hernia for a couple years, dead center in the middle of my abdomen. And in November, I got in a pretty bad car wreck. And
excuse me, Simon. Why do you still have the music playing?
It should disappear in just a minute. There we go. It's gone. Okay. We're humming along in our heads.
Yeah, no, it's distracting okay. me from what he's saying.
Go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead, Ben.
So in November, I got in a pretty bad car wreck, mm-hmm. and I felt like I developed a second hernia on my left-hand side in the abdomen after that car wreck. And I know I need to go in and get hernia surgery, but what is the process of that, and about how long am I going to be down for the count after I get surgery on my abdomen? Place a couple
okay.
hernias.
Well, let's narrow this down by the types of hernia first, because what you're asking makes a difference. So you say it's right in the center of your abdomen. That would be what we call a rectus yeah. diastasis, where there's two big bands of rectus muscles that go up and down have separated in the middle where they're supposed to be connected. And then you get a piece of bowel pouches out in the center. That one is a very, very simple procedure. It's an enlarger incision because you have to expose it, but you can just pull those rectus muscles together and either with some stitches through the fascia or even a little piece of mesh, you can fix that so it won't pull apart. That one doesn't worry me at all. But you say on the left side, where on the left side? Is this down in the groin area? Is it, let's see how to describe this. If you were in the office, I'd point and I'd say, is it right there?
Inguinal area.
Most people don't know that. Yeah, most Americans cannot identify
but
the inguinal ring. They know groin, but there's a difference in femoral and inguinal hernias.
I just got dropped.
There we go. Just dropped you, Ben, but now we've got you back.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You got a lot of background noise with you on your phone. Is it rubbing on something or?
There we go.
Oh,
much
sorry.
Better.
No, I had called you back and it went to Bluetooth, so I apologize for that. It's on middle of my stomach, middle of my abdomen on the left hand side. So not my groin, but up toward just the center on the left hand side of it, where it feels like your stomach muscles would attach to some part of the muscles on your side. I'm not okay.
So those lateral rectus.
Okay.
Yeah. So in some ways that's a simpler procedure, but it. But if you're getting two of those, one central and one lateral, it tells me that you've got some pretty odd anatomy because that's unusual in a man. Women with childbearing, if they get a great big uterus that pulls everything apart, they can develop rectus diastasis. But in men, that says we've probably got a genetic defect, something that you were born with. And so I'm not quite sure what the anatomy they're going to find when they get there. And that'll make a difference in how the repair has to be done. So, but general rule, you can expect that after they fix it, if they have to do an open procedure where they make a larger incision instead of laparoscopic, and my guess is that's what it's going to take, you're probably going to be laid up for several days to a week, and then you won't really be back to full activity for about 3 months or so till that fascia has a chance to really scar down and make a good connection. And it'll be 6 months to a year before you've got full strength in there. So that's So it's going to be a while. But if you're getting more defects over time, it sounds to me like somebody needs to go in and see what's going on.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions of really good professional places that I could seek out to do the actual surgery? Not necessarily I can use my, get the recommendations, the referrals from my primary care provider, but where you think they do great for hernias?
Well, actually, this is not a technically difficult procedure. Any really good abdominal surgeon can handle this, and almost any site is have more than enough competence to do it. And this is just basic operating room procedure. So we aren't talking about, tiny blood vessels in your head or something. So I would not worry much about where. Any good hospital is going to work just fine.
That's reassuring.
Yeah, this is technically not tough, just a matter of patience and exploring to see exactly what the anatomy is. And that's my biggest worry is I'm guessing that you've got some abnormal anatomy that you were born with because this does not normally happen to men.
Well, I was wondering if the car wreck I was in was potentially the culprit, messed something up. But
yeah, well, and that probably did increase intra-abdominal pressure enough to cause a new spot to open up. But again, that's unusual. The fact that you've had one for years and years, and now you've developed a second one, says me there's something about your rectus abdominis muscles that are not the way they are normally made in men. And so somebody needs to go take a look and see what we really got to work with.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
All right, Ben. Hope you get some relief soon.
Bye-bye, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Phone lines are lighting up. We've got lots of questions coming up. Let's see if we can get all of them in. Rose calling in now from West Seattle. Good morning, Rose.
Hello, Rose.
Good morning. It's not Rose. It's Lois.
Oh, hello, Lois.
Okay.
Hi.
Are you Lois
it's
Lane?
Me again.
Is Superman your friend?
Yeah, he is. Superman is the Lord, yes. He is.
Oh, all right.
Interesting.
What I'm dealing with this now is I have intestinal infection and bladder infection, and they got me on antibiotics, and it's called AMOXK.
Amoxicillin?
Right, yeah. 500 milligrams. But my problem is, and I don't know if it's all related, but I keep having something squirting into my abdomen. It's like gas. It's rumbling, and it just all day long. It's been going on for several weeks now. What could that possibly be? I mean, is something squirting from my left side?
It probably is gas.
It's not painful.
Yeah. No, it probably is gas. The bacteria and the yeast in our bowel ferment carbohydrates, and they produce gases in the process. And if you've got a narrow spot in your bowel and the gas is on one side, it'll kind of give you a rumbly, squirty feeling as it's going from one place to another. Not dangerous, but irritating. Mm-hmm. But you can
relax.
Do you
think the medication, the antibiotics, is it contributing to this?
Yes, it can be, because the amoxicillin will kill off a lot of the normal bowel bacteria, and that allows the yeast to overgrow. And it's the yeast that do the fermentation. So, yes, the antibiotic knocks down your bacterial load. That allows the yeast to overgrow, and the yeast are the ones fermenting the carbohydrates and making the gas, and that is what you're feeling squirt. Mm. Normally, once you finish the antibiotic, within a few weeks, the bacteria should start growing back in and come back into balance is the hope.
Okay. Well, my infection is called E. coli.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yep. Escherichia coli is, again, amoxicillin is a very good drug for that organism. Covers it the vast majority of the time.
Yeah, I have one more day on it. But okay. Can it be extended? I mean, I feel so much better as far as pain and
it can be extended.
My bladder, I can't empty my bladder. And it's just a mess.
Well, what you need to do is to go back and follow up with the doctor that gave it to you. Let that physician run some testing to see if they believe the infection has been adequately controlled. If they think the infection is not yet adequately controlled, they can continue it for another week or 10 days if they want to. Yes.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, it's my kidney doctor. I have stage 3 kidney disease.
Okay, yeah, I think you've called before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, but yes, you need to go back to the doc and talk to him about the infection. And like I said, they can extend it if they believe it needs to be extended.
Right, okay.
All right?
Okay, so don't be too concerned about all the squirting.
No. That's nuisance, not dangerous. Not going to harm you. It's just one of those interesting little things.
What can I do for relief? I mean, if it's
GasX. Go to the drugstore, buy something called GasX, and it'll decrease the amount of gas in your gut, okay?
Oh, good.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Lois.
You're welcome, Lois. Take care, dear.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to break. We're going to go to break quickly right now and then back with Mark and Ed with their questions in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love.
It's Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Mixon's explaining what he gets to do the rest of the day with his family.
And for the rest of you that missed this fascinating thing about
cookie tournament.
Insane cookie tournament.
You want to go.
Yeah. Well, my daughter fences Epe, and she's getting better. And anyway, between the real tournaments where they get national points, they have just a little in the fencing club, what they call a cookie tournament. And every competitor brings in a box or a bag of cookies. And whoever gets last place for the day gets first choice of the cookies. And next to last place gets the next choice. And so it ends up that the so-called winner takes whatever's left over. Okay, so it's a way of balancing.
Sure.
If you get the kudos from coming in high ranked, you get lower cookie choices.
Okay.
But if you get lower ranked, your compensation is you get better cookie choices.
Oh, look at that. Well, this is one definitely you and I should do.
Is that an incentive to not do well?
Bring your friend.
You know, it's one of those things that fencing, of course, is many hundreds of years old.
Right. I mean,
you know, it is from stylized sword fighting. And but because it developed back when gentlemen were gentlemen, even though it's now girls fencing too. In fact, when I was a kid, girls were not allowed to fence épée because that was a man's weapon because it hurt too bad.
Oh.
Because it's a rigid triangular blade that doesn't flex worth a hoot. And so when you get hit, it hurts.
Ouch.
And as I told my daughter, well, that's the incentive to hit them. Don't let them hit you. But but anyway, girls can now fence épée.
Oh, wow.
It still has protocol. You know, the winner congratulates the loser on doing a good job,
sure.
And the loser congratulates the winner. And so,
good
you know, at the end of the match, you salute each other with your weapon, you know, and if you win, you console the loser. And especially when it's children fighting, the losers sometimes cry.
Sure.
Mm. Especially if in the process of losing, they got hit pretty hard. And
yeah,
it hurt.
That could hurt.
Yeah.
You
know?
So, you know, they've been hit at least five times because that's how you lose. It's great to teach sportsmanship. You know, when you win, part of your job as the winner is to console the loser.
Yeah.
Yes.
Part of your job as the loser is to congratulate the winner.
Yeah.
And I don't see enough of that in American society.
Mm.
You know, we get too much envy and jealousy instead of sportsmanship.
Mm. Yeah. That's I love that they're teaching that.
Yes.
Sportsmanship. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. All right. Let's take another call. We're getting all the calls from Seattle today, it seems.
My goodness.
Mark is on the line. Hi there, Mark. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, Mark. How can we help?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Hey, I called in 3 weeks ago. I was just a week out from a turf and then he did another blood test on me, or it was from the TERP. The blood test said, I'm seeing 200,000 colonies of something, but he didn't, I guess he don't name it or whatever. But And he gave me a prescription for nitrofurantoins, and I didn't take it. But I did take zinc, gluconate, vitamin C, B6, and magnesium chloride in varied amounts. And where I was getting mucus and blood, probably, let's say, a dozen a day coming out, in that week, it went down to zero. And it's been that way now for 3 weeks.
Good.
So on my observation, I mean, I can say, well, on my observation, I cured whatever those 200,000 colonies were.
Okay. But
that may not be. And so what has happened is I've become impotent, or, I don't know, 80% impotent.
Okay. Well, and that happens with a TERP sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, Doc, my question is, have you ever known nitrofurantoin monohydrate to be a factor that, or the use of nitrofurantoin be a factor in a post-TERP infection? And so if I didn't use what it's got, this what causes my impotence?
All right. I don't think that has anything to do with your erectile disorder. The nitrofurantoin monohydrate is what you're trying to say. it's a good urinary antibiotic. We use it a lot in bladder infections. It clears things up quite nicely, has very few side effects. I was a little worried when you didn't take it, but if your infection cleared, and that's good news either way.
Should I ask him for another blood test to make sure?
Yes, absolutely. You want to know that the infection is cleared. Because when you do the TERP, you're doing a surgical procedure with what we call a cutting loop. It's basically a loop of wire that they run a high-frequency oscillating current through it, and it basically generates a microwave current that heats the tissue, and it's cutting it with electrically generated heat. The penile nerves run across the outer capsule of the prostate. There are four of them, two across the top left and right, two across the bottom left and right. And depending on how deep they go into the prostate tissue and how much heat and microwave energy they've got, that those nerves can be traumatized or even severed in rare situations. The other thing, however, is if your infection has not cleared, just the inflammation from the infection can traumatize those nerves. And these are the nerves that provide both the sensation and trigger the dilation of the blood vessels. See, to provide an erection, what happens is the veins have valves, and the venous valves shut down and the arteries open up, and you flood fresh high pressure blood into the penis, and it can't get out the venous side as easy, and so the penis swells and gets firm. Okay. If anything is interfering with either that blood flow in, so that not enough blood is coming in, or if the valves are not shutting efficiently and too much blood is flowing out, you don't maintain a good erection. Okay, so there's a series of neurologic and vascular functions that have to take place for that erection to happen. So it is a very complex process, really, and it doesn't take much to upset it. Before your surgery, were you having any difficulties with your erections at all?
No.
Good. Okay. Well, that's good news. I mean, if you were having good erections prior to surgery, with a TERP, it's unlikely they have severed the nerves. Cutting the nerves happens more with an open, total prostatectomy. So they have to go to great more lengths to protect the nerves with an open procedure. With a TURP, I've never seen all four nerves cut. So probably we've got swelling and trauma, and the infection has probably made that worse. So here, make sure the infection is totally cleared up. Give it at least another month or even two to see how much you recover. There are things we can do. There are medications we can use to improve the blood flow into that penis to dilate those arteries more efficiently. There are also some mechanical mm-hmm. things we can do to obstruct the outflow of the venous tree. So this can be addressed, but there's a fair chance that if you give it a couple of months, it may well recover on its own.
But where, what you just explained about that, where can I find that? Do you have, where is that where I can know?
Every basic physiology textbook has a chapter on erectile disorder, and it's there. This is pretty basic medicine, so almost every anatomy and physiology book around covers it. First year medical students learn this stuff. but not very many English majors do. So you
know. That's why I didn't hear about it.
So give it a couple of months, and if things are not perking up for you, let us know, and maybe I can give you some better advice. Okay.
Okay. What's the acoustic wave therapy? Is this something that will cause more problems than it solves? Or
what kind of therapy?
Erectile dysfunction, acoustic wave therapy.
Oh, no, it's not going to cause problems. Yeah, in fact, we have the newest, best, fanciest device available. So, you know, if you want to come to one of my clinics, we can fix that. And you don't have to be a regular longevity patient. We offer this to men throughout the community. And, you know, we can set you up and treat that if you need it. But if things were functioning well before surgery, step one, before you spend money getting acoustic wave therapy, give it a couple more months to recover. And then if it's not recovered, we can fix that. Okay?
All right. Oh, and there's the music, Mark.
All right. Hey,
thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow, that 2 hours flew this morning with all sorts of questions. Started out with some tough ones this morning, too.
Yeah, we did. Actually, the last one was the simplest we had.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Leading Edge Medicine every single week live in the studio. Dr. Mixon and Dr. UMAP this week. My name is Lynette, and we want to see you. We want to see you stronger and healthier and leaner, faster, smarter, and
sexier. Oh, yes.
Happier. Happier, too. Make that appointment like so many have done and become a longevity patient. It all starts with that free health analysis appointment. And the number to call to get in is 1-866-86-YOUNG. We like to make it easy for you, so you pick the clinic that is closest to you, the longevity clinic. We have one in Linwood, Tacoma, and in Kirkland. Pick the day and the time that work best for you, and you can get scheduled, and we will see you healthier in the next few months and into the next year. How about that? You can also go to our website at lmclinic.com. You have a great rest of your day, and we will see you next time on Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you for listening.